Welcome to Two Girls with Grief podcast. It's a podcast where we talk about grief, and there might be tears, but there might also be laughter. Join us as we figure it out in real time. We aren't professionals, we're just professional grievers.
This podcast is for those dealing with grief, those who want support dealing with grief, and those who just want to learn. We are your hosts. I'm Rachel Dwyer.
I'm Kendall Rogers.
For any potential triggers, please check the episode show notes prior to listening. Without further ado, welcome to our second episode, What is Anticipatory Grief and Why Does Nobody Talk About It? In our last episode, we talked about being new to grief and that experience, but something we don't hear talked about very often at all is what is anticipatory grief and what does that feel like?
So, Rachel, where are you with your grief today?
Today was a very normal day. I feel like I kept busy. I didn't read any sad books. So for today, I'd say that it was very normal, and you really need those days where like grief is not at the forefront of your mind. Today, I'd say it was a very normal for grief day. What about you?
Yeah, I was super busy today. I felt really, really good about life and kind of same thing, no bouts of sadness. So I'm feeling a lot of gratitude for having a happy day, and which you probably know are rare and hard to come by. So I'm feeling very gracious today.
Yeah, you have to just accept that some days are good, some days are bad, and that's just living with grief. So what we like to start off with is kind of sharing what our qualifications are to talk about this topic. So my qualifications talking about pre-grief is that I had caretaked for my dad, my sister, and my mom at different times, had to watch them get sick and different illnesses, definitely had to experience a lot of kind of that pre-stress, pre-grief for all my family members that passed. What about you, Kendall?
Yeah, a lot like you, I was also a caregiver for someone who was ill for a while. I think of it in like two stages. There was taking care of my dad for about 2 years as his health was declining, alongside my uncle. And that was like day-to-day activities, helping him with his insulin because he had diabetes. And then there was the second part of caregiving, which he was bedridden in the hospital for about 6 months, in which I was his power of attorney, his medical advocate, and trying to do things for him within the hospital landscape. So that's my extent with a lot of the pre-grief qualifications. The next topic that Rachel and I wanted to talk about was kind of this aspect of having a lot of hope when you're amidst caregiving for somebody. We're kind of calling it the quote-unquote fairy tale ending, and while you're caring for somebody, you're hoping and thinking that a miracle is going to happen and kind of save your family member. So Rachel, how did you feel and kind of navigate that journey whenever like your fairy tale ending for your family members didn't happen?
Honestly, I feel like it was really just a punch in the gut, in the face. It was just like a lot of pain. And I think, you know, I mentioned it last episode, after my dad passed away and then my sister had been coming out of a coma and she was doing better. Like, I think at that point, I could almost feel like there was semi a fairy tale ending and not. It's like, obviously, it was really sad to lose my dad. But, you know, it's like, okay, the positive is that my sister is still here, you know, have like my other family, and maybe there's some things we can learn from this. And so I think I very much in a way was like, okay, there can be things that you learn from this and positivity. And, you know, my dad still taught me so much while he was here. So I was like, there's so many that you can be positive about stuff. I think as people kept passing away, definitely like fairy tale ending was like, that's not happening. I mean, honestly, I think I just was really sad about it. You know, you think, especially my mom, I was like, this isn't going to happen. Things are going to turn around. And even my sister, you know, definitely times are like, this is going to push forward. But I think it makes it really hard. I mean, it's honestly just really demoralizing when you're trying to be positive and you're trying to think like, you know, you want to always have hope. You always want to think that things will work out in the best scenario, and when they don't, it's honestly just like a really challenge to your mental health and like what you think your life's gonna be. Because even beyond like the fairy tale ending of like your family members being healthy, it's like you think about, what is my personal fairy tale ending with, you know, my romantic partner and who I'm going to marry and weddings and all of that changes. Yeah. You lose family members. And when you picture them being there and being supportive, if you have a family, like all of that changes, all of that is taken away. So I think it's beyond just even thinking things work out. You know, in movies, there's always a happy ending. It's like, it's really thinking about like my happy ending is just really derailed or very different than I thought it would. And I still don't know what my like happy ending for myself looks like. Like that's something I'm still working on. But what is your thoughts on that, Kendall?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. It's just like a devastating thought to think it's not going to turn out happy at the end. And, you know, I think a lot of people kind of have to uphold that hope throughout the process because thinking of the alternative is just heartbreaking. And you're right. It just, it's very demoralizing and it puts you in a place that you're like, how can I stay strong in a time like this if I don't have hope in that? Although like, I'm sure you feel the same way. It's like, you also have so much hope and things will get better. And then it's like, when it doesn't turn out the way you do, you are like crushed. It's like the higher you are, the harder you fall type of thing. So that's kind of like my experience with like hoping too much about a situation and then it not ending in the magical, you know, oh, he gets better at the end, because that wasn't the ending for me.
Yeah. And I think kind of on like a different level is like kind of like the woo-woo side, which I think some people might take it towards prayer. And I think we both have had, you know, experience with faith and kind of our thoughts on that, which we can talk about another time. But I think like the woo-woo side of just thinking like, I think you see so many things about like manifestation and kind of like, I'm yeah. a lucky girl and there's lucky girl syndrome. And I follow so many people on different platforms that really talk about that. And it's like your life, you know, you can kind of direct your life in different ways and bring things to fruition. And it's like, it's really hard to even be in that mindset. And I do think having a positive mindset and channeling positive thoughts does help. I think, you know, you become a self-fulfilling prophecy when your mind goes to a negative place, because you just keep kind of going in that direction. But it mm-hmm. is really hard, because it feels like, it even feels like inappropriate to say like, I'm a lucky girl. Like, you know, when you're saying like, I have lucky girl syndrome, I'm a lucky girl. It's like, how can I say that? Like, it feels inappropriate. And I know that when people talk about grief, a lot of times, like, even people saying they feel happy sometimes is like, is that okay to feel happy? Or okay to feel like this? I have a good day without them. I really try to be on that, like, positive kind of woo side of, like, good things will still happen to my life. I can still attract really good things in my life. You know, mm-hmm. I can have that lucky girl energy, but it is really hard to do that and to think about that, like, even just say I'm a lucky girl. It's like, you don't look at my life and be like, that's a lucky girl. Her life is working in the way that she wanted. So I think for me, it's like, I try to think about the woo-woo aspect of it and like that energy and some, you know, like have positive things I say to myself in the morning and night and kind of channel that positivity. But it's definitely something where I'm like, what is real? Like, and I was obviously, yeah. you know, there's things you can't control, but it's definitely one where I'm like, I really want that energy. I really want to just feel like everything good is happening to me and stuff. And maybe that here on out, that will be how it is. And I'm, you know, putting myself out there to receive good things, but it's definitely a hard one. What about you? Like, how, do you believe in like manifestation or lucky girl syndrome or any of that stuff?
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, it is important to like the mindset to try and bring positive things into your life. Although like I did not feel like any type of lucky girl going through any of that experience. I in full actuality, I felt like the most unluckiest person in the world, because not only are you dealing with caregiving for someone who's ill and the potential of them passing, but you're also having to deal with normal life too. And so like on top of that, if you have any issues with like taxes come around, all of a sudden that weighs so much more on you because you're dealing with so much. And it's, for me, it was like any little thing would set me off because I was already dealing with a very hard situation, and then having to deal with these like day-to-day kind of menial tasks was even harder. And so, like I agree with you. It's definitely like a yes and a no. Like, and at, kind of coming back full around in retrospect, I do find like now having a gratitude mindset in the world, I have more of that like lucky girl syndrome, that lucky girl like idealism of like, if I put gratitude out in the world, hopefully that comes back to me. So that's like how I don't know how I kind of see that, but I think that leads really well into the next thing of like, you're caregiving for somebody who's still here and you're kind of like beginning a process of mourning their life that they once had. And so since you have gone through so much of this, like, how did you handle all those situations?
I think a lot of denial, honestly. I think that's where you really want to kind of have that like optimism, right? Because it's really a hard thing when you're like, you're already seeing them, you know, going through all this stuff, and it's really hard to do. And it's like, I think you want to be optimistic and you want to just think that like everything's gonna be okay, but you're already mourning, like your relationships change when you caretake for people. It's, you know, you're yeah. like, you know, for my sister, like she's my older sister, but obviously everything changed when she got sick, and you know, we had kind of had to switch roles, and it's like, and your parents, you take care of them, and not that you switch that role as well. And so I think it's like you're mourning just like the life you had before with them, and where everything felt easier, and it's how you were brought into this world and how you thought life was going to play out. And it's really hard to kind of, you're mourning already like everything that you lost, and you know that it's not going to be the same. So I think for me, it was just semi-denial and then just kind of being sad with just everything changing so much. But what was your experience with that?
Yeah, I think like I had such a long window, weirdly to say, to mourn. But obviously seeing and in your experience and my experience, like watching a parent kind of like drift away kind of thing, it was like my father's health started declining, and like as a kid he was like strong and smart and funny and just had like this energy, but you know, very like, towards the end it was like he was losing his muscle mass, he was losing his memory, like his personality wasn't the same. And it felt weird, like at the time being 22 to 24 years old, having to step into like a almost parental role of your parent, and all of a sudden you're making sure they're eating the right food and you have to take them places. And that is very hard to start seeing that your parents aren't going to stay here forever. That's like a really hard reality to, like a really hard pill to swallow, that at some point, like that's a reality you confront. And I did not want to face that. I did not want to even think about my father not being a part of my life. Although watching that decline, and you know, it was very clear as day, like his mentality was declining, he was forgetting things. Towards the end he didn't know who I was, and I think that was a really tough moment for me to conceptualize, thinking that like he can't even remember his own kids anymore. And that was like a moment I started mourning that like I'm losing my father slowly but surely.
Yeah, I feel like we touched about it a little bit with, you know, the health decline and them not looking mm-hmm. the same. But I think people really don't talk about how hard it is just see your loved ones, be it like a former shell of themselves, to see yeah. them really, I guess, like get skinny or like be skin and bones or just be in pain or just be a different person altogether, you know, because of the sickness. People don't talk about just like how difficult that is, and like you can have those images stay in your head. Like I hate remembering them like that. I hate remembering them in the hospital. I hate remembering, like, there's so many images in my head that I'm like, I just literally try to shake it out of my head because I hate thinking about it. I don't consider it normal to see your loved ones like dead. I don't, like, it's such a weird image, and it's like it pops into my head, and people don't talk about just kind of the toll it takes because it sticks to you. It isn't just like when they actually pass away, you don't think about seeing them like that. You don't think about how, you know, how hard it was to see like that and in a helpless situation where you can't do anything to fix it. And, you know, you try so many different things, but it's like at the end of the day, like, there's nothing that you personally can do to get them back to a healthy space. And yeah, people don't talk about just like that is something that sticks with you. It doesn't go away. And it's the worst way to remember people. Like, it's so hard to remember them like that. And I still don't know. Like, I don't know how to take it out of my head. Sometimes I literally like shake my shoulders or something, or just like sit in water. But I honestly don't know how to remove those images from my head, because I really, it's not my preferred way to ever remember them. But like, have you tried anything, or like, do those images stick in your mind?
Yeah, same thing, especially at night, and thinking of my father's state of health definitely towards the end. And yeah, it's really hard to see someone you love not and like how you remember them in their best light almost. And I really sympathize for anybody who's like experiencing that and thinking, like, especially now, like you want to remember as much of them as possible. And then unfortunately, some of these memories are super traumatic and you can't control when you think about them, right? Like, they just kind of pop up. I remember, like, especially at night, and I'm just wondering and thinking of my dad, and if the images pop into my head, like it gives me a lot of anxiety. It definitely is like, no, like, I want to remember him in his best state, you know, when he was at his strongest and his healthiest. And it's, I really hurt for a lot of people that have that image of someone they love in that state, because that is really hard. And, you know, I don't know how you navigate that, because it's like you still love them in whatever state they're in, but it's hard to start that mourning process. And especially when you're starting to mourn someone who's still alive, you're trying to capture as much of them as you can. And that kind of puts more emphasis towards, like, unfortunately, the worst parts, or the worst, you know, I guess, state of being, or their health they might be in at the moment, which, you know, is really hard to think when they especially is sick into dying. And I think, like, that active process of, like, knowing a person is passing, like, that's really hard. And so I remember, like, my dad wanting to have this pre-death conversation with me, and it was like he knew the time was close. And so fortunately we did it when we did, but I'll tell you, for, like, as a daughter and his power, like, eventually it was the conversation that led to me being his power of attorney. It was a conversation I did not want to have, because I think a lot like you, it brings it into reality of that this is happening, and you need to, like, reckon with that happening in a real sense. So when my dad, it was very important to him that he had this conversation with me. He's like, we need to get a power of attorney. We got to do this. We got to make sure we get that done. We got to make sure, you know everything before I leave. But I was not in a frame of mind to take that on yet. And I think that's an important thing I wish I could tell myself looking back, of like, this conversation is not for me. This is for me to have, like, a guidebook to know what to do after he's gone. But I think now being me in the future, older, that I could say it's very important for that person who's in the midst of passing, or think that they're about to move on, like, that they have this conversation with you. I feel like that's the very, like, least kind of thing of, like, and I'm the oldest, so, I mean, it was very natural for my dad to come to me and be like, okay, here's what you have to do, because I've never been through this before. It was a learning experience in the worst way. But I think, like, at the time I was very resistant to that conversation and not wanting to acknowledge it. But I think now going through it, I'd be like, okay, like, being able to separate, like, okay, it's logistics now. It's like you trying to execute the next part of what this person wants from their passing. So did you have any conversations like that? Because I want to feel like I'm not the only one who did.
So So my mom did try to make me the power of attorney, but I was holding on to like the last bit of hope that like this would turn around and that didn't need to happen. Sure. And I just like could not accept that like this was a thing, like this was going to be something that like I needed to do, that this was the end. So I just went in full on denial and did not do it. And thankfully I have a brother older than me and he took on that responsibility. And because I just couldn't, I was just too sad. It was too real. And I'm very thankful that my brother did that, because I just, yeah, her just even saying it, I was like, don't say that, like, that's not needed. What are we doing here? And so I thankfully that my brother, that is where being the younger sister really worked out for me. And my brother took that on, because it's like, that was really hard. And that kind of leads into like the next thing we want to talk about, is just like people like being aware of just being the person that's caregiving, and also just seeing your family, even if you're not the active person being caregiver, and just seeing your family member sick, it's like, it takes a huge toll on you. Like, as a human being, it takes so much. You don't have time to care for yourself. You have like, you know, for, it's like you put your life on pause. You're really doing so much for them. And then it's like, you just feel like, you know, you're moving forward, and then it ends. And then you're like, well, my whole life was helping you live and stay here. And now it's like, what do I even want to do? And I mean, even during IDFA times, like, it took me a while to like feel like, oh, I can work out or I can do things for myself. I just felt like I had to be very much in those situations. But it takes such a toll on just like your life goals, and switches your life goals. It like does so much that it like, it's not even just an after feeling. It's really like the process and how much you're putting aside, and it just takes a huge toll on you as a human to do that. What was your experience with, like, what kind of toll do you think it took on you?
Yeah. When I started caregiving, I was 22. I had just graduated college. I completely changed my plans in life. I thought I had this whole path for a career and I was going to move, and then I needed to come home and help take care of my father. And I don't ever regret that, but definitely at the time I had some animosity about, I have to sacrifice literally my future to do this. Like, and that's never something I'll regret. I look back and I'm so happy that I was there. And because I don't think my brother or sister were in a position to step up in that way. Like, I had a sister in college and I had a brother in high school. Like, they were not prepared for that. But, you know, like, I couldn't hang out with friends. I couldn't like go out to do fun things. A lot of my life slowly became to like orbit around my dad's health. And there's so much stress that you take on, and so much guilt that you take on if you were to do something for fun, being like, geez, I get to go do something for fun, and yet like my father's at home. What if something happens? Like, what if something happens and I'm not there and I can't be there to check? And so I think like slowly and surely over time, like, I isolated myself, which isn't good. I totally think that it is so much easier if you have a community or support that people can step in and be like, let me give you a break. Like, you take 2 hours and go run errands while I can like look after your loved one and make sure like everything's good. Because I think that was like the repeating thing in my mind was like, if I go do something, if I go to the movies, will he die? Will that be on me? Like, I'd feel so guilty. And that just like slowly but surely, like, I had no self-care in that time. I didn't know how to implement that. And I wish looking back that I asked for help more and relied on other people to help me be the best version of myself, so I could have been a better caregiver to my father, which I think rolls into the fear of like people's outside opinions. When people aren't caregivers and they come in telling you how you should be doing things, I had a lot of people telling me I could be doing things better. And I was like, well, shoot, I'm trying my best here. Like, I'm just a girl who doesn't know anything. Like, just trying to keep a grown man alive, yet it's heavy and it's confusing. And, you know, I think, like, you can't expect you to be perfect all the time either. It's just, it's a part of accepting that you will make mistakes, especially if you're younger in this position, especially if you're older. If you're older and you're going through this with a loved one and you're like, how come I can't be better at this? It's like everyone has felt this way in a caregiving position. So what was your experiences with like people outside of the caregiving space for your loved ones, in which like, did you feel that pressure? Did you feel like those expectations from you?
I feel like for certain times, I mean, I think somehow kind of defaulted at different times to be the caregiver. But I think, in my opinion, I think a lot of it is like, I feel like the people that would not caregive say the most. And a lot of people can say how things should be. And it's like, as a person that's caregiving, you already are questioning everything, questioning life, like not even just for them, but for your own life. Like you're doing so much and handling so much that it's like the people that aren't in that situation always have the most to say. And the truth of the matter is, like, people, like, unless you're doing it and you're in it, like, you really don't have, you shouldn't have an opinion on it. And I think sometimes it makes it harder when it's like people don't know what you're actually going through, but people say the most when it's not their experience. And that just really is for everything. But yeah, I think it's hard when you're just doing your best and it's like people have an opinion. It's like, well, I'm doing this all the time and I don't think it necessarily had to be all or nothing, which I felt at the time. But like, I think, yeah, it's just hard when, you know, you feel like it should be a certain way and then people that aren't even doing anything have an opinion of how it should be. So I just feel like if it's not your experience, if you're not in it, saying stuff that's not like is not helpful. Like it's not helpful. And we kind of talked about before, like, I mean, how we both are caregivers, but and how you're the older sibling. I was the youngest sibling, and just kind of like how different that kind of process can be, but how we kind of ended up in the same position. I think, you know, being the youngest, I still like my dad had a heart issue that happened, you know, years before he passed away, but he still needed like a whole summer where he needed help. And I gave up my college summer to be there the whole time. And at the time, my brother and my dad didn't have, like, they had kind of a strained relationship. So I think it's fair that he wasn't there for that. I think it wouldn't have been a good situation for them. But my sister, she was also nearby. Like, she never took, like, I'm going to be here for a week and I'm going to take over. Or like, she was really living her own life. And, you know, now that she didn't make it to 29, I'm like, okay, like, I'm glad you got to live your life. And, you know, it's like, I'm happy she got to live as much life as she did. And, but at the time, it really was, like, really hard for me that I'm, like, I'm the youngest. And so many ways, it's like, when you're youngest, you get told you're, like, a spoiled brat. And I feel like in some ways, yeah, I definitely was. But, like, I mean, in maturity-wise, it's like, I also don't think I got enough credit for, like, I gave up my whole college summer. I didn't see my friends. I canceled all my trips. She didn't. And like, you know, it was a whole summer where I'm hanging out. It was before like TikTok or before you really could just entertain yourself with your phone. So it was a lot of like hanging out with my aunt, uncle, and my dad all summer. And not a ton of activity. So I think I never got enough credit for like, that was really hard. And it was interesting. Like as the youngest, I had been doing that forever. Like my dad had depression growing up and like, I was still like kind of the main person always helping. And yeah, I think somehow that became a role and I don't know how when I'm the youngest and I don't think it'd be assumed that like I'd be taking that on. But I mean, my brother definitely helped for like my sister and my mom when they were sick. I think it's one of those things where you wouldn't expect it, but then, and then of course everything escalated from there, like the amount of caretaking and everything. But yeah, it's interesting as the youngest when you have to like step up and change everything. But what was your experience as like the oldest sibling? And I know you said your siblings weren't in a place to help, but at the same time, I think sometimes it's like, when is it fair to ask? Is it fair to take it on yourself? Like, that's kind of the questions that I feel like, what is fair, you know?
Yeah. And I think even just with what you've experienced, and I think as like an older an older sister of three, I can't imagine sharing that burden with my youngest brother. He's the baby, and it's something that I didn't try to hoard from them, but it was also something I didn't want them to feel the pain of. And I think culturally, this is like where I think growing up in Texas, that's different. I kind of knew my entire life, like as the oldest, it was expected of me and it was my responsibility to look after them. And if something were to happen, I was the next one after my parents to take charge. And I kind of always knew that. And I feel like I was trained that way, weirdly enough. Like, and I don't want people to feel sorry for me listening, because I'm very proud of that. I feel like I've done a good job in the past year of trying to be a big sister and trying to be there as a sibling. But there was a time where I felt like I was acting as both a mom and a dad to my siblings. But I think for the main part was that absolutely, like at the time my brother was, I think, 17, he could have 100% stepped in and helped out with that. But I think in some way I was also trying to block them from that experience. I didn't think, if I try to rationalize how I was thinking back then, I believe that I was trying to shield them from the reality of like understanding how sick our father was. They knew it. They understood what was going on, but to the level, I don't think they quite comprehended where he was really at. And that's heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking me to watch that every day, but I didn't want them to have to keep experiencing that. I'm even now, like now that I'm kind of like the quote unquote leader of the family right now, I'm trying to coach my sister of like, let's think practically and let's think logically. If something were to happen to me, I need you to be ready to step up to look after your brother. And she's kind of like understanding this is the role that I've always had to fill in our family. And I think she's gained like this appreciation of that. Is it a hard role? Yeah. Is it expected? I don't think so. It's not as, I'm not trying to force her into that position, but it is easier to be prepared in advance than having to like figure it out afterwards. And in which I'm thankful for. I am thankful that my parents kind of told me that you will be strong enough to do this. Because there's no other option. Like, you have to be strong and you have to figure this out, and you will, because there's nothing else that you can do. There's no other option to fail at this, to like flunk and trying to how caregive and lead a family. Like, I don't want to do that to my siblings. So taking on that burden, I think I am more than happy to do that every time for them. And I just hope that, you know, in turn, they can do that for each other. That also leads into caregiving is a thankless job. And I don't know if anyone ever told you, like, good job, Rachel. Like, you did, like, that was hard. That's hard to do. It's hard to take care of someone in that position. And I think at times, like, I just wanted to hear that from somebody of, like, I'm proud of you. Like, I'm proud of you for stepping up and doing a hard thing. And for me, in my reality, like, I wasn't really told that until after he passed. And at that point, like, I was in such a different state of mind. But while I was in the actual caregiving position, I wish, like, someone had told me, like, you know, this is really difficult. You're doing a good job. Like, you're doing your best. I don't know if you need the same validation like me, but was, like, that ever told to you? Were you ever, like, appreciated for everything you did?
I mean, I definitely know, like, when it was happening, like, I know that, like, my actually family members appreciated it. I don't think a lot of people understand really what's going into it. And I think when you're in it, sometimes you're really just thinking about the next thing, right? Like, yes, there might be feelings of like, this is hard, and it feels like you're feeling all those emotions while it's happening. But I think sometimes it's hard to step back and just like even acknowledge what you've been through, what you did, what you like, kind of your own strength and everything. Like, sometimes it's really hard to acknowledge that. I think like one time that kind of stood out to me was after my sister passed away, one of her friends, who has always been kind of like very funny, I feel like I've never seen him serious. He's always been nice to me, but like I've never seen him as like a super serious guy. And his card was the most heartfelt card, where he basically said, like, just like he noticed, like, even when my sister was sick, just like not when she was like sick, but like he just noticed like our roles changed and kind of just like the shift of me like becoming the older sister. And like him acknowledging that. And I feel like I always thought, I don't know how like it came off to her friends, but I feel like I was always kind of portrayed as like the bratty younger sister in a lot of ways. Like, I feel like if I ever stood up for myself, that's somehow how I came off. And, you know, it's like when you're the sister, you're always wrong, right? So like to me, that's, I feel like that came off a lot when I, you know, I'll say like, I don't think that was fair, but it was interesting to see the card. And I remember it made me cry because it was like something that I don't think I even really acknowledged that part of it, that like our roles completely switched.
Yeah.
You know, and like I had to become the older sister in that situation. I don't think I really acknowledged that thought process until I read his card. And I was like, oh, yeah, like that's also why like it goes back to like the mourning the situation, mourning like your relationship with the person, all of that. And I think I just remember that card. I was like, oh, wow, like that's true. And sometimes it's like that's where you have to step back and be like, that is a big change and that's really hard. And I think it just shows like when you love someone, you don't think of that part. You just think like, I need whatever you need, I'll be there for you. And I think that was like a good kind of step back to be like, you definitely need to acknowledge your strength more and like just what you take on and like give yourself credit for that. Cause I think that's something you don't really do in the moment. You're just like trying to make each day go by. Was there anything that like surprised you as you're critiquing about like the situation, or just like, I know you said like you automatically were the caretaker and considered the power of attorney, but like, was there anything about it that like surprised you in terms of like, how other people acted, or just even like with just doing it, was it worse than you expected? Easier than you? Well, I wouldn't say ever say easier, but like, did you ever doubt that you would take it on or like that you could handle it?
I feel like I would be lying if I said there wasn't times I thought, why am I doing all this? I feel guilty saying that even now. But that's the honest feeling. I feel like when you're doing it, especially for a long time, you're like, how long can I keep this up? And it's kind of like a flash in my brain. And immediately I felt selfish and immediately I felt guilty for like, well, you wouldn't give this up because you love your father. He's done so much for you. This is the least you can do is be there for him in his 100% complete time of need. Like, he needs somebody more than ever. Like, this is where I had the time and I was the oldest and I had the know-how. I was like, of course I was going to step up. But I feel like in a full, honest, transparent, like, and for people who are listening and experiencing this, like, I don't want to lie and say I never thought about like throwing it out the window and like, well, I'm going to start living a whole different life. I think another thing is how tired you are. That was something I did not prepare for or expect. In fact, the first year I had graduated my undergrad and I started a grad program, and I was working full time, taking care of my father about full time as well, and then taking a full course load of classes. And I flunked out of grad school. And I thought that was such a representation of me that, well, what do you mean I can't take all this stuff on? Like, of course I can. I can do anything I put my mind to. And I think that really hit me upside the head of like, no, you're tired. Like, you're not sleeping even through the full night. Like, you're taking care of your father in the middle of the night. You're working a full-time job. And at the time, the job wasn't a healthy position. Like, I wasn't in a good state of mind even with that job. The pay wasn't good. So I was already just like, every part of my life aspect was like distraught. So yeah, I was not in a place to like succeed in school. And I kind of had to like let that go because I was like, well, I need a full-time job, obviously, and I need to take care of my father. So letting go of like that, I don't want to say it was like a dream, but letting go of that that thing that I really wanted to do was grad school and be like, this is just not the time in my life to take that on. And so those were kind of like things I was not expecting when I took on the responsibility of caretaking. But tell me what was surprising to you when you entered that role?
I don't even honestly know what I felt in that time. I think it was something that was very automatic to me. I think the things that shocked me was like it not being automatic for other people, or just like I said, like my sister wasn't, like, especially like when my dad was sick, like she was very much kind of doing her own thing. And I think the shocking part to me was like how does this end up just being me, and like it's not fair, you know? And for that kind of stuff, I'm like, oh, I need help. I was in college. I was like, why don't I get to enjoy any of my summer or get to enjoy any of that time? And it was one of those things where it's like, I did think that, but at the same time, I also knew like I wouldn't just leave my dad. Like I knew that I was going to be there. Like, I just felt like that I like someone had to, and he needed someone. And, you know, I was going to be that person. But I think it's sometimes where you realize like caretaking isn't for everyone. And I think it's like everyone always says that, like, you know, sickness and health, or I'll be there for you if you're sick. And the truth of the matter is that a lot of people are not made to be caregivers or capable of it. And like I said, like my sister didn't make it to 29. So like I'm at the end of the day, I'm like, you live your life, whatever life you got to live, that's fine. If I had to take a full summer so that you can live your life and enjoy as much of it, you know, like now I'm like, yeah, like I'm happy you had a summer, you know, that you didn't spend the summer doing that, because she had limited summers. But, you know, it is one of those things you realize, like, not everyone is made to be a caregiver. And so many people, the assumption is that everyone will do it. I think it's way less people that are willing to actually do it than they say. Like, people talk a lot, but actually be there and do it and see the things that you see and experience the things that you experience. Reality is that there's probably more people that won't do it than will. And I think that's kind of, I think a slap of reality of just like how people really are and the reality of things when life gets tough. And I think it makes you see. Also, I think like looking in the future of like even for your own future partner, like what do you see as important, and like what kind of traits you want in your partner that you know, like he would actually be there for you if something happened, or like what is supportive. And I think also you need someone that knows how to be supportive of your grief. There's a lot of things that kind of connect with that, but I think a lot of it's just like it's kind of gives you a glimpse into like how people really are when you're dealing with all of that.
Yeah, that's such a good point. All that stuff. And I think particularly like having someone step in and want to do that, that's so important to find. And then thinking like the people who would step up don't, which is like it's crazy because people have skill sets, and I think people can, they may not be able to be like a physical caregiver, but they can be applying their strengths or be able to take time to do something else. Like, as like I was handling a lot of the logistical things for my father. I was his power of attorney. I was the executor for his stuff afterwards. And I think for my experience, it took a lot longer than a normal person because it was COVID, and it was also a lot of like court things and a lot of just like meetings and paperwork and a lot of stuff that I didn't know how to do, which in some ways was like a bigger hit to my ego, but it was really hard for me to comprehend that. Like, so I was very confused for a lot of this stuff. And in the paperwork side, I hated doing it, but I did it because I had the power to do that. Thankfully, like, my aunt and my uncle were super supportive in helping me with things and would help me kind of understand the legal lingo and what does this contract actually mean, or what does this paper actually mean, or how to find things that I had no clue how to get access to. And still like empowering me with a choice at the end of the day to make the best decision on behalf of my dad. And so I felt very grateful. And I know a lot of people do not have that support system or that luxury of having people in their life come from like a pure place in their heart of wanting to help someone figure out the confusion of like death related stuff, you know, like you and I've been calling it like the logistical grief, because it's like the boring part of dying is the paperwork you have to fill out. And if anybody out there, a little shout out to all the people who helped me figure out the stuff with my dad. I think it's because they all cared for him and they really wanted to make sure me and my brother and sister were okay at the end. I appreciate you immensely. I am just so grateful for all the people who didn't take advantage of the situation like they could have. And I say that every time I can, because I know there's people that could have. And yet the people that did advise me and help me through that journey was really pure of heart and wanting to see the best for my dad after the fact. What are some other things that you can think of that like are tied into that when thinking of like the stuff you have to deal with as someone is passing?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I did handle some of it, but not like at all like my brother did, in terms of like, you know, mm-hmm. You don't think about like how many death certificates you need for stuff, or like just right. How many things you have to close, banks, all stuff, you know. In the age of now, there's social media. Like, there's so many different things you have to think about that people don't really think about, just like how many logistical things have to get done. But I think it's also like you have to clean out their stuff. You have to sort through it. You have to decide what you want to keep. You have to like, and I think it's so hard, because it's like, you know, my dad had a whole house thing, you know, had to do, like, and like even with my mom, like I didn't actually go through her stuff and it got sent to us, but it's like, I feel like there's still so much stuff that of hers is missing that we still haven't even gone through, or I don't even know if it's gone or whatever. And it's really hard to go through people's stuff and like sort through it and decide what do you want to keep or don't want to keep. And it's like, I have so much stuff that I'm like, should I still keep it? That it's really hard to decide like what do you need to keep versus what to not keep. You know, it's like you're going through someone's all their possessions and deciding what is worth keeping, and that's such a hard decision to make, and you don't really usually have a lot of time sometimes to decide those things. So I think it's like, there's so many different things that come after someone passes that it's like, sometimes you think about it before in kind of that pre-grief time, you know, it comes to mind of all the things you have to do, but it's also just like a crazy thing. And I know we're going to kind of talk about it later on in another episode more in depth, but I think like it is one of the things like you, even as they're alive, you know, you're starting to like do different things to kind of set things in place. And that part's really hard. Yeah. And I think it kind of leads into like the next topic of like, do you think you could ever really prepare for loss? Like, is there a way to set yourself up for that? And my answer is really quick. I would say like no, like, because I think it's really one of the things where I think like, you know, you can stress about it, you see them getting sick, you see all those things, and then you still want it to be okay. And even through all of that, when it actually happens, it is way worse than it is. So it's like, I think if it's possible, try to not take on that pre-stress and that pre-expectation of how it's going to be, because it's going to be way worse. Right. It's going to be way harder. And, you know, why have that eating away at your body and soul before it even happens, when it's going to be worse? So I would say no, but like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think as someone who supported somebody while they were in a state of like bad health and then dying, I could not prepare for it. I didn't know what to expect. And like, kind of, we mentioned near the top of the episode of like, I had such high hopes too. Like, I literally thought all of a sudden something magical was going to happen and he was going to be okay. And when that did not happen, like that crushing reality of like, oh, this is the worst situation I could be in. Like, the pain, the hurt, the shock, the anger, like everything combined into one. Although like I remember in conversations with my aunt and uncle of like how much we had to do and figure out, because my dad wasn't expecting to pass. Like, this was very sudden. And we were just lucky to have that conversation about power of attorney to get that done. So I could have the rights to sign things and do stuff for his medical journey and towards the end. But he did, like, there was a lot of things that were not set up in place by the time he had passed. And talking with my aunt, uncle, like, they now, I think learning from my father's experience, starting to set stuff up of making sure that their affairs are in order when they pass, so it's not as hard on their kids to have to execute or do. And I think, like, if a person is in a place to do that, to start preparing for their passing, like, it helps a lot. It helps their kids. I think a lot of people are like, death is so far off. Like, I don't need to worry about writing a will. Well, the thing is like, you never know when it's going to happen either. Like, so many people pass unexpectedly and then it's all in disarray and people are trying to figure out, like, what do you do after that? So, like, in like a physical sense, can I myself prepare for loss, my own loss? Like, sure. Yeah, I can get my stuff in order and make sure, like, my sister knows exactly what to do in the steps, in the orders of how to do it. Can you emotionally prepare for loss? I don't think you ever can. I think it just is, like, it is just such a traumatic and sad, sorrowful thing. It's like, there's no world where that gets easier, you know? And along with that, like, for me myself, harboring, like, resentment or anger through this, and not necessarily ever towards my dad specifically, but towards, like, the situation of specifically the pre-grieving period, like, expecting people to step in and help and them not being there, or just, and I think it maybe in a global sense, like, just mad at the world. Like, I was just mad that I was in that position. I was mad that I was young and having to do that. I didn't have a lot of, like, life experience up until that point. So I would say I was also very naive and very selfish. And that experience really pulled me right out of that and being like, not only am I going to become super selfless by the end of this, but I'm also going to have, like, a very different perspective of the world that I never had before. And so that kind of, like, brought in a lot more questions of, like, kind of a larger sense of humanity and faith and stuff, that I just had this internalized anger that I needed to process through. But I couldn't even begin that journey until after my father's passing and as I was in the middle of grief. Because in the middle of the caregiving, I was just, you're so focused on surviving, you know, and trying to just keep a person alive, which is so much work, as you imagine. But, like, what about you? Did you have any of, like, these ongoing feelings during that time period?
Yeah, I mean, definitely as, like, especially as things kept progressing, I think, yeah, it's like you have a lot of anger of, like, how does this keep happening? Like, this can't be the reality. Right. You know, I think at times it's like with even the caregiving and sickness, it's like sometimes you think, like, this isn't fair just in general. Like, it's not fair for my family to be sick. It's not fair that, like, you know, also putting my life on pause. And I think it's like you expect that you're supposed to be, like, perfect in that situation. And it's not, like, you're feeling so many different things. And I think it's okay to admit, like, you're angry, and you're angry just at the situation even being a thing. Like, it should not,
yeah,
they should not have gone sick, they should not have passed away. Like, and in the moment of, like, it is really hard to do all these different things to take care of somebody. It's I don't say, like, it's not natural, but it's like you're not expecting to, like, take care of your sister, your parents, like, for me specifically, like, in a way that is not just being there for them, not just loving them. It's like you're doing other tasks, you know, going way above that. And it's like sometimes it's frustrating and it's hard, and you could feel, like, bouts of resentment of, like, this has just also become my life. And I can't even imagine the people, literal saints, that are experiencing taking care of, like, lifelong caregivers for their family members, sure, or loved ones. Like, that I can't even imagine, because it's like you're so happy they're there, but it, you know, like, when they're here, and even, you know, when they're sick, you're just so great, you know, you're happy and for that part. But it's like, mm-hmm, it doesn't mean that you're not angry and resentful that your life didn't turn out the way that you wanted. And it's mm-hmm, not just, it's not a very clear, because there's so many mix things in it with you're also sad and you're all these different things. So it's like, you know, it's, I don't think people like to admit that they might feel that anger or resentment just in the process of your life also not being what you wanted it to be for yourself. Cause it's hard. Yeah. You feel guilty of just even thinking about yourself, but it's like, you know, we all trying to live our life and, you know, you only have control so much. So I think it's that type of stuff where it's like, if we don't have those honest conversations when people are actually in it, they're going to think, sometimes you might think like, I'm the most horrible person that I even had that thought. And it's like, no, you're human.
Yeah.
And this isn't easy. And it's okay to have that thought that, you know, and I think most important is like, you're there. And I think what I would is like, what I know that I don't have is like the regret of not being there. And I think that's kind of like the next thing we want to talk about was just like regret. And I think it's like when someone gets sick, you have the choice of like, am I regret not going to be there for them? Am I going to regret like doing my own thing and not really being there for them? It's like, I don't have that regret. And that makes your heart so much lighter in the one aspect, because there's so many things. This is very complicated, but in that aspect, I know like, I was there and I don't have regret for being there. And even in that like pre-group time of seeing them sick and stuff, it's hard and all this stuff, but I, you know, I was there and I showed up. And I think people should think about that more kind of in that pre-group period of what will you regret if you don't do it? Like, I think that's a very important thing for people to think about, is because the hardest part for people post, like when they actually passed away and they're actually in the actual grief period, it's like they have regrets that they should have done stuff. They have regrets they should have been there more. They have regrets for this. And it's like, you really need to be focusing about like when they're still alive, like, will you regret not making that trip to go see them? Will you regret not taking time to spend some time with them? Will you regret being with them, you know, helping out, taking care of them? Will you regret that? You know, those are things that you have to live with after. And I don't think people think about that enough. And that can like immensely affect your mental health after, because you don't have that answer. You can never really fix that. You just have to forgive yourself. You just have to move on. And that's easier said than done. So I think people need to think more about what is important to them to focus on in that pre-grief period of like, how do they actually want to show up for somebody during that time? Because regret is the worst thing to feel, and people need to think more about like, in that pre-grief time, what will I not regret, and like, who do I want to be? But what are your thoughts on that?
Like completely the same of like, I don't have those what ifs. I know I was there. I know I put in as much time as I could to keep my father alive as long as possible, and even with all the mix of emotions, like, even talking about being, like, resentful earlier, like, it's not even resentful about this, about actually him, but it's, like, being angry about being angry kind of thing. And still, I think all that is worth it to not have that weight of regret on my shoulders for the rest of my life. And man, do I empathize for you if you are in that position where, like, you do have regret about all the things that you can't do or say to somebody after the fact. I don't even know how you reckon with that feeling. That's something like that scared me enough into doing whatever I could during my time with my dad to make sure I didn't live with that, because that would not have been well for me. And I think that like also aligns with this idea that at some point, because I did have a lot of like regrets while I was caretaking, but that you need to forgive the things that you messed up on and understand that you weren't ever going to be like 100% perfect all the time. And how I had to like approach that was that I was just thankful to have that time with my dad, and thankful that I was in a place that I could do it, even if I was like, you know, sacrificing a lot. It was still worth it. And I am thankful that, like, I got to have these conversations and I got to spend so much time with him when I did. And, you know, like, COVID was such a bad time for everybody. And, like, I don't ever want to be saying that, like, oh, it was good for me. It wasn't. COVID was real awful and for the whole world. But trying to think you know, gratefully in that sense. Like, I got to spend a lot of time in the hospital with him because everyone was working remote. And if that wasn't the case, I would have had to, like, be in the office and then, like, see my dad at nights, you know? And so I try to rewire my brain. Like, I catch myself being in these, like, oh, poor me kind of modes, but I want to catch that and, like, remind myself of, like, but you did what you could and you're thankful for that time. And not a lot of people get that luxury. Like, it truly is a position of, like, of gratitude, I think. How about you, Rachel? Is that, like, a similar feeling that you encounter?
Yeah, and it's interesting when you said, like, with COVID, and, you know, it makes you think of all the people that got COVID during during
sure.
the height of everything, yeah. and they couldn't have people with them, and exactly, it does make you think yeah. of, like, I am so grateful that during a hard time they felt loved, and I was able to yeah. be one of the people that provided that, and
yeah.
I just would never want to be in the hospital and really sick or going through it and feeling like I didn't have that support or I didn't yeah. have that. And I would never want that for them. So, like, I'm very thankful that I could be one of the main people yeah. for that for them, because no one deserves to be going through that stuff alone. And it's a hard thing. And it's a hard thing to ask of people to do for you, you yeah. know, like, it really is, and it's not an easy thing to navigate, but I think it's one of those things where you have to just be very thankful, like, that I got to be there, because I know that they weren't feeling that loneliness or ever doubting, like, they were loved. And I think that's so important to think about, regardless of, like, how difficult it was, regardless of just all the different emotions and things that came with it. It's like, it's just so important for people to feel loved, especially during, like, a really hard time. And I think,
yeah.
you know, if you're capable of doing that, you should really be there for them. And I think also for the people that, like we mentioned, like, having that kind of regret, I think it's like, I really hope if anyone listening does have those regrets that you do forgive yourself, because I just, at the end of the day, like, they would want you still to be and not holding on to that. And, you know, just be grateful for the time that you did have with them. And I think if you regret not doing certain things, just make sure for the next person that you show up for them, you know, and you show up yeah. the way that you want people to show up for you. I think that's so important, because, you know, there always just needs to be more kindness in the world and more empathy 100%. And really showing up for the people that you love. And it's like, you know, I think more and more people are disconnected. I think COVID really kind of did a lot for that too, of people moving away from each other and separating and feeling, you know, being very comfortable being alone and in their own time. And I think it's really important to have those connections, because that's, to me, is like what makes the world worth living, is like connections with people and kind of the impact you make on people. So I think that is a part of it, just being thankful and gracious and, you know, being forgiving yourself, because no one's perfect. I think those are so important. And I think kind of leads to our, like, positive ending, where we always want to have a positive challenge for people at the end of each episode. And for this one, we chose to do something nice for someone. So, like, extend gratitude, kindness. And it can be in so many different ways. You can just, like, say hi to someone that looks, you know, sad. It can be, yeah, check in on someone that you haven't checked in, that you maybe feel like, oh, there's a friend that I haven't really talked to in a bit that probably, you know, could appreciate someone catching up or someone checking in on them. It can really be just smiling at someone. It, like, I mean, not in a creepy way, don't do but, you know, like, just, it could be so small, but, you know, talking to someone or just anything like that. I think a good way for this, because of our topic, would be, like, is there someone in your life that you feel like you haven't been pouring enough into, or you haven't been as good of a friend or support as you wish you had been? Like, I feel like it's a good time to check in on that and see, like, can I be a better friend? Can I be something, you know, to extended gratitude? And I think that's something that I'm going to do for myself for this challenge, just, like, think about, like, which one of my friends, like, do I feel like I haven't talked to enough that maybe I should check in with and make plans with, that I haven't prioritized that recently? So that's something that I'm going to do, is just, like, make sure I show up for my friends. What about you? Do you have an idea of what you're going to do?
Yeah. I remember this was a kindness extended to me, and I try to share this kindness to anybody in the same situation, because it was such a small act, but it's such a radical one. while I was in the hospital, you know, sitting with my dad days on end, not knowing if he is going to get better, I had a friend, one of my good friends from college. She was my first roommate. She sends me $5 through Venmo. And she's like, just get yourself a coffee today. And that small little thing, just like that allowance to be like, do something nice for yourself, like really inspired me. Like, you don't have to send $5, but like if you are in like a position where you can like do something for that for somebody, maybe it's getting them a coffee, or maybe it's like helping out with something, you know, small, like someone needs a babysitter and you could just babysit their kids for like an hour or two. But I remember her sending me $5 while I'm in the heat of taking care of my dad. And now anytime that I know someone is about to lose somebody and they're in like that medical kind of period of being in the hospital, not knowing if they're going to come out of it, not knowing if things are going to end okay, you're like awake all hours of the night. You're so like wired, but you're also tired at the same time. And I send people money to buy themselves a coffee. Do they spend it on coffee? I don't care. I think it's the fact of like a reminder to them that do something for yourself today, because you're spending so much time caring and loving for somebody else that you deserve a coffee. You deserve caffeine to stay awake a little longer. So that's the kindness like I try and share with people when I know they're like going through these situations that you and I have gone through. And as always, there's resources in the show notes. Please peruse that. Please look into that. There's a lot of great tools there, and we highly encourage you to take advantage of them, because who knows, like something could really help you. And a reminder, we have new episodes every Tuesday.
Yeah, and how to join the club. So not literally, if you haven't lost anyone, you're always welcome to listen. We always think that these conversations will also help you just like be there for someone that's going through loss, yeah. Be a better friend, you know how to talk about it more. So we hope that you don't literally, if you haven't already joined this club, that you don't have to anytime soon, but you can just still learn from it. But you can follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and on YouTube. You can follow us. Our handle is Two Girls with Grief Pod, and it will be in our show notes as well. We also always love to hear your challenges, so please email us at twogirlswithgrief@gmail.com. We'll also put that in the show notes. In the next few episodes, we'll start sharing like challenges that we hear back from listeners. So look for the show notes for that email. We'd love to hear that. And as a final reminder, you know, grief always looks different for everybody. So if nothing we said resonates with you, please don't worry about that. Hopefully something that we talk about in the future resonates with you. But just know that, you know, hopefully we're just trying to find a space and like community for people that are grieving or wanting to learn. And we're just hoping that it's helpful. So we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.